The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. California, this is from thefreebeacon.com. California leads the nation in out-migration and has experienced a domestic out-migration decline since 1991, according to the California Department of Finance. According to a recent survey, 53% of all Californians, 63% of millennials from California, and 76% of residents in the Bay Area say they are seriously considering leaving the state. California has recorded net domestic out-migration since at least 1991, according to state data, meaning it has lost more people to other states than it has brought in from them nearly every year. In 2018, the Bay Area hit the highest level of outward migration in more than a decade and still holds the top spot in the country for out-migration. According to a new survey from the Edelman Intelligence, 53% of Californians are considering moving out of the state, citing its high cost of living. Millennials are more likely to leave the Golden State, as much as 63% said they wanted to leave. But more than any other resident in California seeking to leave are 76% of those surveyed living in the Bay Area. Joint venture Silicon Valley, which also studied the Bay Area's out-migration patterns, found that workers are moving to Sacramento, Los Angeles, Seattle, Austin, and Portland for several reasons, but their primary reason was the high cost of housing. Bay Area residents are not alone in their concerns about the high cost of living and affordable housing. Those two concerns were cited by those surveyed by Edelman. Among those surveyed, 62% said homelessness is a very serious issue in California, with 62% saying the best days of living in California are behind them. According to San Francisco Gate Research, Californians have left the state to move to Texas or Colorado. Nearly all interviewed cited the high cost of living as the primary reason why they left. In December 18, one of the most frequently searched questions on Google among Californians was, should I move out?
Well, this is a matter of policy. The high cost of living is a matter of policy that was begun, I don't know, ages ago. But it can be reversed. But do you not, but can you, getting back to the whole shaming business, can you say that out loud? Well, Phil Mickelson couldn't.
No, he could. He was shamed.
So if he can't do it, can the average person do that? Say, look, I got to leave because the high taxes and the high cost of living, the high cost of government policy here in this state is too much. Or do you just quietly Google, how do I get out of this place?
You quietly Google and you
go.
And you leave. And it's the difference between being a celebrity and doing
right.
It. Especially being a rich celebrity.
But as we, what would it take to change things in California? It would take a big movement. Who wants to be the first in that buffet line? No one.
No politician does.
No.
You know, it's, well, we see what's going on right now nationally. And if it's going on nationally, it's already been through California.
Mm-hmm.
You and I talked about the fact that Elizabeth Warren came out and said, you know, I'm not a socialist. I got to play this here. You ready? Oh, I mean,
right.
It's not ready to go.
Okay.
All right. It's not ready to go here. The former governor of Colorado John Hickenlooper was asked about this. We'll have it coming up. I forgot he was on one of the Sunday morning news shows where they asked him about, you won't answer the question about whether you're a capitalist or not, because as a Democrat, you can't say you're a capitalist now. Remember when socialism just a few years back was a dirty word? Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Calling Obama a socialist was the new N-word.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still the new N-word? Because everybody wants to be known as a socialist now, except a few now who wish to separate themselves from the socialists.
Well, Bernie says it. My ideas now are being widely accepted. He's been a proud socialist for a long time. He doesn't really make any argument against that.
Oh, yeah, by the way, did you see some of the new polls coming out, too? They're still looking very strong.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I have to ask you this question here. How far did CNN skew the group that they had last week, the focus group?
Right.
Because every one of them voted for Hillary, and every one of them. None of them wanted Biden. None of them wanted Sanders. Mm. They want the young people. And Ocasio-Cortez is a genius.
Right.
Because we're looking at the polls, and the latest polls show, it's dominant. Michigan, Biden 40. In the Democrat primary, Biden 40, Sanders 23. That's 63% right there in Michigan. Then Harris 12, Warren 11, O'Rourke 2, Hickenlooper 1. And then when you look at it, in the hypotheticals in Michigan, Trump versus Biden, Biden by 8. Trump versus Sanders, Sanders by 5. Trump versus Harris, Harris by 2, Warren by 2.
Hmm. I think something that has not been factored in yet is the winnability.
Oh, these mean nothing. It just gives you an idea in the Democrats what they're thinking, because what we're told is Biden and Sanders don't stand a chance, and every poll in every state keeps coming up that Biden and Sanders are leading.
Now, here's the question, too. If you included that, if it showed that Biden was the only person who could beat Trump and he would beat Trump with no problem, would you support him?
I would say you would get 80% of Democrats saying yes.
Because the goal is to beat Trump.
Right.
Anyone but Trump.
But Biden up 17 in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at Iowa, Biden by 2, Biden 27, Sanders 25.
Remember in 2016 when you had the I'm with her movement?
Mm-hmm.
Where you had Republicans saying, I'm going to support Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they're going to try and revive that.
I'm with Joe. Overall, nationwide, this is from last week, Biden, this is nationwide, Biden 31, Sanders 27, Harris 11, Warren 7, Booker 4, O'Rourke 6. Everybody else is below 5.
Mm-hmm.
But Biden and Sanders, if you look this is nationwide. Biden 31, Sanders 27. That's 59% of the vote. So when we saw on CNN that nobody wants Biden, nobody wants Sanders, nobody wants Hillary, they all want somebody young, they all love Ocasio-Cortez, how skewed is that focus group that CNN had on last week? Because we keep seeing it in poll after poll after poll after poll, Biden and Sanders is taking 50-60% of the Democrat support.
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, those people on that were on part of the focus group on CNN, clearly not the independents. So you have to factor in the independents all along right. The way. That's the group that's going to get you there.
Well, but I'm talking here, the majority of these we're talking are the Democrat
Sure. Or, no, I understand
the,
that.
The Democrat
but when you think about what it's going to take to win, who could win the independents Trump?
Well, okay, which is they're Biden probably
right.
would
right.
have more of a chance.
Right.
But what's interesting was all of those that they had on were Hillary. They weren't even Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
They were Hillary people who now don't want Sanders, don't want Biden, don't want Hillary. It's got to be, and they love Ocasio-Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because they look at her and say, okay, what we need is a young woman? Is that all it is? We need a young woman like her.
And what
she's new, she's fresh, she's not a Hillary.
And what do you do if you're the DNC?
Well, and
you've got a guy who wants to win, but you can't put up an activist because you know the activist can't win. Or wants to run, rather, in Joe mm-hmm. Biden. And you know that Biden, or you believe Biden has the best chance of winning over Trump. But you can't do anything about it because the loudest group, the group of activists, says, no, we want this person. Or we want somebody besides Bernie.
You make a point. When is the time when Ocasio-Cortez, Omar, and a few of the others come out, the new radical left,
mm-hmm.
and come out and say, this is the candidate that we all endorse?
That's what I was asking last week. Because the party's going to have to listen to the most vocal group within the party. That's the way it's always been. You're going to have to prove something to them. They don't care. Ask Omar about what she said about the former president, Barack Obama. That's anything but an endorsement. She certainly, I can't see her going out and endorsing after that his vice president.
Yeah. If she's implying that Obama's a murderer, mm-hmm. well, then what's Biden?
And you know at the DNC, your only hope of winning over Trump is to win over the middle. You can't do it with someone who's going to get the endorsement of the far left, an Ocasio-Cortez. Wherever her endorsement goes, likely not, unless it goes to Bernie. I guess Bernie in that category might be your best shot, but he's not Joe. And he can't win over the middle. He can win some in the middle, but by and large, he's not going to win enough to get the win.
It is going to be interesting.
It will be.
866-90-RED-EYE.
You may not be able to predict blizzards and ice storms, but that doesn't mean your truck has to be a victim to old man winter. Make sure your rig is ready for any last-minute winter storms by periodically inspecting your belts and hoses. Drastic changes in temperature can be tough on a truck's rubber components. That, combined with additional pressure and tension put on a vehicle's belts and hoses, can lead to major issues. To avoid having these issues come up or worsen during a storm, have your coolant hoses and drive belt system inspected at every oil change. Inspect the belt for rib wear, cracking, glazing, or piling. If you hear any belt noise or see irregular belt movement, have your system inspected by a technician immediately. Stop into a TA truck service near you to have your hoses and drive belt system inspected by one of our trained technicians today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Carrie in Ham Lake, Minnesota. We were talking about Representative Omar before and Ocasio-Cortez. Hi, Carrie. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Love the show.
Thanks.
It's kind of interesting because you guys nailed it earlier when you said that the old school Democrats, they're kind of in trouble, and they are. I think what you're seeing now on a national level, I know here in the state, that's exactly what happened in the state elections. That's how Ilhan Omar got in the Minnesota legislature. She defeated a stalwart DFLer, and that's what we call Democrats up here, Democrat Farmer Labor, named Phyllis Kahn. Phyllis Kahn was a representative for quite a while back in 1990 when I was working with the Minnesota Community College Student Association. We got to work with the legislators quite a bit. And she was bulletproof. Phyllis Kahn was bulletproof. She was very well known, very liberal, and she happened to be Jewish. And it's interesting, the district Omar represents, which is something I just learned, has the largest population of Jewish people in Minnesota. It also has the largest population of Muslim people in Minnesota. But that race between Kahn and Omar, the primary, was brutal. And you could see very quickly the type of person Omar was just by how she dealt with Phyllis Kahn. There was no respect for the party. There was no respect
for most people aren't familiar with what's going on in Minnesota politics. So what's the point you're trying to make?
My point is, overall, I think the same thing happened with Ocasio-Cortez. The old-school Democrats created a monster. They created Frankenstein, and the chickens are coming home to roost. And they're starting to see the first wave of these really, you know, true believer millennials that are coming through. And I don't think they can tame what they've created. I think we saw a little bit of this. I don't know if you saw the video of the kids in Feinstein's office.
Yeah. We played the audio.
As Eric calls them,
the gang of 8-year olds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The gang of 8-year olds.
But that is another example of what I'm talking about. They have split and parsed and issued and, you know, all these groups. And they've got them all kind of stirred up and got them all drinking the Kool-Aid.
Well, and we talked about this, because what they've created is a generation of activists. And now they've created a generation of activist politicians. And we talked about this in after the election, and thank you, Kerry, in 2016. I mean, we're going back a few years when we talk about how the Democrats have taught their followers, their rank and file over the years, to wake up every day and find a new reason to be a victim. Which means you're also pointing out in that same move a group of new oppressors. And when you do that, you're going to split more and more. You're not going to unify, and you're likely not going to unify to the point of a party that is gelled in a huge way. I'm not saying they won't win big elections in the future. They just might. But they won't do it with this kind of mentality. They're going to have to change that, but I don't see that changing anytime in our lifetime.
I don't see it changing. And one of the other things that's happening, and Peggy Noonan had a column over the weekend that got a lot of notice, where the Democrats are now stating if you come out, they demonize you so hard and so quickly that even if you say, well, let's be reasonable here, they will attack you, that you are every sort of demon known to mankind, that you end up apologizing, even if you're saying, well, no, I think a biological man is a man, where it is so swift and so complete right now and so organized, where you feel that even if you're right, you'll be smothered by the left, so we won't even attempt to fight them.
Right.
Well, you're going to find a little bit different coming probably from conservatives out there, because conservatives will argue each and every point with you.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that won't be intimidated. Maybe on the left they'll be intimidated, but they're not going to be intimidated on the right. And that's where it's going to stop. That's where you're going to see the pushback, and that's where you're seeing the pushback right now.
Done.
25 Hours of Reality. Every week, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, other stories we've got to make sure we get in today because so much happened over the weekend. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants to pass sweeping tax hikes on the wealthy. This from the New York Post on Friday. But the freshman lawmaker might want to take care of her own unpaid tax bill first. Brook Avenue Press, a company she founded in 2012 to publish children's books in the Bronx, owes the state $1,870.36 in corporate taxes, public records show. The state slapped the company with a warrant on July 6, 2017, 2 months after Ocasio-Cortez announced her candidacy to run against Democratic incumbent Joe Crowley for the district that encompasses parts of Queens and the Bronx. The state requires businesses to pay a corporation tax on a sliding scale based on revenue. The minimum payment last year was $25. The company probably got numerous letters from the state and probably ignored them, one New York City accountant theorized. Public records show the state dissolved the company in October of 2016, which can happen when a business fails to pay corporate taxes or file a return. The state tax department won't comment on individual companies, but typically files warrants as a last resort after trying to collect the money, said Ocasio-Cortez's spokesperson Corbin Trent on Saturday. This is the first we're hearing of it, and we won't have any additional comment until we look into it. The company relied on cheap office space in a city-subsidized program to help small businesses in the Bronx. Called the Sunshine Bronx Business Incubator, the program was housed in a renovated former printing plant in Hunts Point, where rates for office spaces and tech services in 2012 averaged between $99 for a virtual office and $275 per month for local startups. Ocasio-Cortez was featured on the city's website for the incubator, and the National Hispanic Institute named her a social entrepreneur in residence. You're seeing a huge return on your investment here, a 22-year-old Ocasio-Cortez told a reporter in July of 2012. People pay $500 an hour for consulting that we get for free by the water cooler. A tax warrant was issued to Brook Avenue Press at the incubator's address on Garrison Avenue. But despite her promise to work with designers, artists, and authors that really know the urban story and help develop story for kids, the Post could not find any books the publishing house produced. So there you go. Let's pay your corporate taxes now. Be interesting to see the response. I mean, that was Saturday. Hopefully we'll get a response today.
Right.
As to whether they have fully paid their corporate tax bill.
Certainly.
I beg to differ, though. Well, okay, maybe it wasn't. It wasn't published by that publishing company, so they were correct. But her latest children's book was published a few weeks ago, The Green New Deal.
Yes.
I don't like Green New Deals and ham.
It's filled
Sam
with,
I am.
Filled with unicorns and lots of fairy tales.
Yes. So she finally, I mean, maybe it's not this press company that did it. She got the government directly to produce her new children's book, The Green New Deal.
Yeah. You saw that border crossings from Canada are on the rise?
Yes.
You know why that is. That's the Prime Minister and all of his people moving away from the controversy.
The scandal.
Hey, they don't have a wall, eh? Let's go south. Yeah.
Did anybody move up there from the States?
Not that I know of.
There would actually be a problem the other way if the Hollywood people that said they were going to move if Trump was elected actually went.
Right. A lot of them work in Vancouver when they're filming stuff, but eventually they come home. No, they never follow through with that promise. Much to my dismay. They never actually go through with it.
I mean, wouldn't it have been great if Canada wanted to build a wall because so many people from Hollywood were attempting to go up there?
Well, remember, you've got to share their values. They're such nationalists.
That's true, remember. And we brought this to you, the survey that was done, that the vast majority of Canadians, that if you wish to emigrate to Canada, want you to have their shared values. And there was no outrage about that at all.
Listen to this. This is the story from NBC News.
Okay.
Dateline, Derby Line, Vermont. More than 960 people crossed into the U.S. illegally from the northern border with Canada last year, according to data released from Customs and Border Protection. Gary, nearly 1,000.
For the entire
year.
In just that crossing?
Yeah.
All across?
Into the U.S. illegally from the northern border with Canada.
Well, that's nothing.
It's almost nothing.
That's almost
relatively
nothing.
Speaking. In fact, in the next paragraph, wow, that number is a tiny fraction compared to the migration across the border with Mexico. It represents a 91% increase. This is the version of NBC going, see, it happens at other borders too. It's a 91% increase. Not calling for a wall up there, a 91% surge. You can calm down, NBC News. Why isn't this a national emergency?
That's almost as big as their story on, is the Clash the most important band that we can't live without?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That appeared over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, my favorite story, though. This is really true. I thought this is where you read a headline and you say, wait a minute, this can't be legit. And it was from Newsweek.
All right.
Did you see it?
Mm-mm.
Elderly Americans are dying without getting to read Mueller's report, and they're not happy about it. That is not an Onion headline. This was all over social media. From Newsweek.
They'll never know.
As special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation is reportedly coming to an end, elderly and sick Americans are trying to hold on to their lives so they can read the highly anticipated report that has been nearly 2 years in the making.
Uh-huh. That's why you're trying to hold on.
World War II veteran Michael Tendler, a man who survived numerous historic milestones, including the Korean War, Vietnam, Watergate, and President Bill Clinton's impeachment, survived.
He survived Bill Clinton's impeachment?
Fell sick on December 29th at 93 years old. I got a call at 11 o'clock. My mom said, well, Dad's not feeling well. He really can't stand, Tedler's son, Walter, recalled. Within a couple of hours, they called 911 and got him to the ER, and he wasn't getting any better. Mm. Tedler survived two implantable defibrillators throughout his life, but while on his third, he started to fade after he was provided painkillers by the doctors. Tendler voiced his final thoughts. I'm not going to see the Mueller report, am I? He said. That was really the last coherent thing that he said.
Well, while I certainly thank him for his tremendous service to this country, I just can't imagine myself being in that position going, I'm not going to see this person get justice or that not happen. I guess for me it would be, I'm not going to see my granddaughter walk down the aisle or graduate college or graduate high school or something.
Yeah.
I mean, me old-fashioned.
This was actually a story.
Yeah. Well, here's my question. They write it as if it's a huge number or a significant number of people. I'd like to know exactly how many they found.
Well, yeah, out of 320 million people out there, you're going to have two or three that have a thought that may be outside the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Is that news?
Right. I might be looking back at my life thinking, look at how many great things I was able to see during my lifetime. You know, for me, it would be hair bands, Facebook, Instagram, the interwebs.
Well, let me ask you this. Are there as many people? Did they check to find out if there's elderly people out there that are on the verge of dying or in hospice care that are waiting to see if the inspector general finds anything on Hillary?
Right. Where are those reports being done?
Or if are there people in hospice awaiting to see if President Trump releases and declassifies the Department of Justice and FBI texts and emails and the FISA warrant application to find out whether those in the Obama administration spied on the Trump campaign by knowingly using false information and selling it to the FISA court as intelligence in order to get a secret warrant to spy on the opposition party? Did NPR go out and try to find people in hospice that have that impression? I'm sure you could find that also. I'm sure if you went to hospice and people that are close to death, you could find people that would give you a variety of different things that you would say, oh, really? Oh, I was asked that question specifically. I might not have thought about it, but if you ask me specifically, if I'm on my deathbed and you ask me that question, what are you thinking about? That might not come to mind, but if you said, well, wouldn't you like to find out before you died what Trump had? Oh, yeah, I would. If you're asked that question, you might respond that way, correct?
Yeah, specifically.
If you ask me if I'm on my deathbed, would I like to see what's in the Mueller report? Well, yeah. If you didn't ask me, would I respond that way?
Here's what I would say. If I'm on my deathbed, you're asking me stupid questions. You see that I'm on my deathbed.
Get off.
I don't have... You're taking up my valuable time.
Get off my bed.
Yeah.
Get off my bed.
Get out of my room.
Get out of my room.
I don't know the point of that.
Would you like to know anything? Yeah, why the media is so damn biased. That's what I want to know on my deathbed.
Right. Why they're here asking me stupid
questions. You're NPR? I'm wondering why my tax money is still going to fund...
Yeah.
Anybody in the media.
Exactly.
Let Eric and I go in. We'll go in and ask the questions.
Oh, yeah. Right. What do you think is the greatest accomplishment that you saw in your lifetime? Yeah. Innovation-wise.
Yeah, that's a great point.
What's the greatest moment you think there was? What is one moment that really sticks out in your mind?
I wonder what my father would say at 93.
Right.
Probably, he might say the polio vaccine or antibiotics.
Babe Ruth's daughter was 102. She passed away.
I saw that, yeah.
And I think to myself, 102 years. And her dad was Babe Ruth. Wow.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. That's a great point that you made there.
I was looking at the Ocasio-Cortez video where Bill Nye, you know, walks in and surprises her, and she stands up and applauds.
Bill Nye, the annoying guy.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. This is the liberal CPAC. That's what that is. That's exactly what South by Southwest has become. It's become their CPAC. You know? And it's always interesting just watching that exchange and where those, you know, where the values are separated. You know, we talked about Michelle Malkin and her comments there at CPAC. But at the basis of it, there is that set of ideas, right, that are very basic.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly we agree with anyone who wants more border security. And it's a very basic concept that they're not too hard to understand. On the other side, you've got, well, the Green New Deal. And they can't even defend it, saying, well, it was parts of it were just a joke. It's really weird.
I know.
But it's a huge difference, but they get all the attention.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. How's everybody doing? Now, we're doing okay because we've been doing this show for a while, and we're loaded up on coffee and things like that. But you doing all right? Because it was a little rough for me coming in. I mean, because just the hour change put me in a little bit of a jet lag, but I'm doing okay now.
I didn't really feel any difference at all.
See, I did.
Yeah.
It always gets to me, but hopefully that ends today. And you know, for us too, because I go to sleep 5 or 6 at, you know, yesterday afternoon, try to go to sleep. And when I woke up the first time, it was still light out and I had no idea where I was. I was like, what time is it? Where am I going? What's going on?
Yep.
Yeah, all the advice out there where Brian gave me a story earlier that, daylight saving time can cause disruption of sleep patterns, which can affect your health. Yeah, but not just one day.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think most people do adjust. It can have an effect. But while Sunday is a work day, I always make more time to rest on that day anyway.
I will enjoy it in the upcoming weekends when I'm sure I'll be playing more golf. Mm-hmm. Because we can play a little bit later on in the evening.
Right.
So that actually, I don't mind it. There was the whole debate yesterday, you know, people wanting it to be the same time all year round and all that. And it's like,
yeah, I've never seen the point in changing the clocks.
I do like the later summer. I like the later summers.
Yeah, but we're going to get more daylight one way or the other. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So.
Yes. I will say this, though. I was out. You know, normally I go home and go right to sleep, and mm-hmm. I had to take the cat to the vet on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So I was driving back, and there was just a light mist, but the sun was coming through the clouds. I realized how much I miss mornings.
Mm.
I really don't get to see mornings anymore. You know, where you're driving in the car and see scenery. It's just I don't drive at that time. And I went, hey, I really miss mornings, and really, mm-hmm. really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And besides that, hey, my life is okay.
Yeah, my dog and I have to get out in the summer, especially. I have to get out and do the exercising early before the pavement gets hot, because I can't take her once, you know, in Texas especially, you get into the middle or afternoon hours and the pavement's too hot. You don't want your dog running on that pavement, because a lot of what we do is along streets and everything else. So I'm pretty cautious about that. That's something that I'm going to have to get her some doggy shoes or something.
Before we get to the news of the day, I just got to tell you this. I think I did probably tweeted this, or not tweeted it, but I think I did send you the message on this. But the dream that I had, the nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
The nightmare that I had, that I call it my first real job. Not my first job, but my first job in college. I was a bill collector. Okay. I worked at a bank.
Right.
So I had this dream, sort of a nightmare, over the weekend. That I decided to quit this show, and I went back to the bank where I used to work and applied,
And the human resources person was very, very excited that I wanted to work there. And they said, you know, they asked me the question in the interview. But you've been in radio for a long time. And I said, yes, I've been in radio a long time, but really, banking is in my heart and soul. So could you please explain to me what that dream means? Now, they hired me for the job. I didn't accept it, but I showed up for the first day of work and then realized they never told me how much they were paying me. And my boss was out the first day that I was there, and there was nothing for me to do. And they said, well, the people the first couple of weeks really don't do anything here. So what is that? Can you explain that dream to me?
When did you have that dream?
I think I had it Friday night into Saturday morning.
Yeah. Because a couple of weeks ago, I had a similar dream where someone offered me a job, and I was like, yeah, okay. And then I was like, I got in the car, and I was driving, and I was like, well, wait a minute, no. I have a job, and they didn't even say how much you're going to pay me.
We're having the same dreams.
Yeah.
Is this a midlife crisis for us?
I don't know.
Well, the statement that I wanted to be in banking, even when I said it in the dream, I was sort of analyzing it in the dream, saying, when did you ever think that?
Yeah, right.
Because I don't want to be in banking. Because when I first got into banking and they said, look, we want to put you in the management trainee program, that's when I came to the realization. After a couple of years when I was graduating from college and they wanted to put me and have me stay at the bank. And I realized I don't like banking because banking is only two things, lending and collecting.
Right.
That's what it really is. When you come down to it, that's what it is. And I had collected for 4 years. And I said, well, I've collected for 4 years. Can that other part, lending, be any more exciting than the collecting was?
I have a friend who has been in the mortgage industry for a long, long time. And I don't think I could do that.
I have a friend of mine, too, in the secondary mortgage business. He helps capitalize banks that want, you know, from bigger banks that want money for mortgages.
Right.
I'm like, how do you do that? He does it great. He's been doing it his whole life. I'm doing very successful at it. I'm like, how? Where do you start there?
Yeah. I mean, I guess on the grand scale, looking at how all that works, it's fascinating. But, I mean, when you get down to doing the job, I would think it would become mundane. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That you're, let's say if you're an underwriter, my nephew is an underwriter. That takes on something else, right? You're looking at somebody's profile, their behavior, and then trying to determine whether or not they qualify. And that could be, I guess, fascinating, especially if you like people, you're trying to help people, but you have to scrutinize it because you're really looking to protect the interest of the company, of the lending institution you represent. And that could be an interesting dynamic. But in terms of, mortgage lending, it's, I'm sure, the same if you're an underwriter, no doubt. But then you get into the closings and everything else, and I would think that would become mundane. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
What I wouldn't like to do? Work at a title company.
Mm-hmm.
That has to get at times where you're just like, I can't handle it anymore.
I know somebody who has a title company, and what's interesting is that many in the family are working there. And even the mother, who is, I mean, she's got to be 92, 93. She'll come in every once in a while and actually cook lunch for the people there.
It's a family thing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So which was because I went to the office one day and I was like, wow, this is great the way you have it set up. Yeah, because that would become otherwise very mundane, the work itself.
Yeah,
so many details that you have to have.
I know.
You know, but still I would think it would become
I was
mundane.
Ticked off paying attention to all the details when I was signing all the stuff when I bought my home last time. Mm-hmm. So, all right, in the news, okay, we have to start out with Representative Ocasio-Cortez at South by Southwest.
Right,
she said a lot of radical things this weekend, but what I decided to do was pick out one of the, if you just hear it and you're not tearing it apart like a capitalist conservative would, It sounded really good. Mm. It sounded fair. It sounded like what people wish to hear today.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to play this part of it here, because this isn't the most radical thing that she said, but I want to play this on purpose, because this was one where you said, well, this sounds like she's very equitable and trying to be fair here. Mm. Here we go.
You know, just as there's all of this fear-mongering that government is going to take over every corporation and government is going to take over every business or every form of production, we should be scared right now because corporations have taken over our government.
Now, that's false.
Yes,
that's a ridiculous statement. Do they have influence? Yes. Have they taken over the government? No, that's out and outright false. So that would be a radical thing to say, because that's false. But let's continue here. And, of course, it's Austin, Texas, so they clap for something that's stupid. All right, let's go.
And in my opinion, we should be wary of any entity in which both of those things are combined, whether it's through one way or the other. And that's why the emphasis in democratic socialism is on democracy. And it's not about, you know, it's just as much a transformation about bringing democracy to the workplace so that we have a say and that we don't check all of our rights at the door every time we cross the threshold into our workplace. Because at the end of the day, as workers and as people of society, we're the ones creating wealth, not a corporate CEO. It's not a CEO that's actually creating $4 billion a year. It is the millions of workers in this country that's creating billions of dollars of economic productivity a year. And our system should reflect that.
Okay, now before we get to the most important point that she forgot there, first off, I didn't mean all of Austin, Governor Abbott aside.
Yes. And his lovely family.
And his lovely family. No, and all the good conservatives that I know are in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
But what is she forgetting there? Number one, where she said we should be afraid of any mix, because she took her hands, any mix of government and industry. Well, then we would have capitalism then, because the government would be out of it completely. And your plan that you have said with the Green New Deal, government would have to take over capital. They would have to take over the means of production. They would have to. So she wants it both ways. But the one thing where she started talking about the rights of employees, what did she forget about in there? Because she made it the CEO against employees, that the CEO is there and the CEO doesn't create any of the wealth. It's only the employees. What's she forgetting? The people that have a stake in the company, the people that gambled on their money for the company, where are their rights? You know, she doesn't talk about their rights. You have rights as an employee, but as an employee, you either have a contract with a union or you have a contract that you agree to work for a company and abide by their rules. And most people are on a day-to-day contract with that company. You can leave at any time. They can fire you or let you go at any time unless you have some sort of contract. The most you can lose is a job. You don't lose any of your property if you are at a company. What she conveniently leaves out is what most socialists leave out. And that's those people that have taken their hard work, which is represented by their money, and invested their money either as private owners or stockholders into a company. She has completely ignored and not completed the sentence about capitalism and has completely forgotten about the rights of those people who actually have invested their property, which, if that had not happened, there would be, in likelihood, no company to begin with.
Well, in fact, we can use a very relevant example, Amazon. In the early 90s, a guy wanted to sell books on the internet. And he started at a time where, I mean, what was it? Barnes & Noble, I guess, would be his only competitor if you think about that approach. But Jeff Bezos started working out of his own home, started this idea. He left a Wall Street job to do it. By the end of the 90s, you got to the dot-com bubble. Now, he had worked his way up to a success. They were selling books in over 100 countries. And so it was a fairly decent success. You could applaud and say, wow, that guy's doing something, you know, started a business that's actually selling billions of dollars. In 2000, starting in 2000, the dot-com bubble. And over the next 2 years, the company lost 90% of its value, nearly went under. And people forget this about an Amazon. And it's not that it's Amazon. It's not that it's Walmart. Because there will be brands that come and go. I have no allegiance to a brand, but certainly love to hear the success stories of companies like this, because you can look at that and say, okay, great. Then from that, what? Further investment, people taking a risk. We can go on to say and it was a high profile company in terms of what they were going to do. And it was all based on a lie. Theranos.
Yep.
And you're going to see, in fact, the Theranos, there are at least two different documentaries that are coming out based on the work of the Wall Street Journal and others, and the grandson of George Shultz, who, former Secretary of State, who was on the board. But the grandson worked there and became one of the people who outed the company, a whistleblower. And the point is that a lot of people put their money up. Now, that was a lie. They lost their money. But in an honest setting, like an Amazon, after the dot-com bubble, everything could have gone away for a lot of people who invested everything. Right. The people who take the risk have to be a part of that equation.
But you make it, though, that, you know, Bezos actually created something that he could sell.
Right.
When you look at Jobs and Wozniak, mm-hmm. they created something that they could sell. They
right.
they created it. When you look at Microsoft, when you look mm-hmm. at Paul Allen, and mm-hmm. I got mine blank. Bill Gates mm-hmm. at Microsoft, they actually created something. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Because of that infamous 35-day government shutdown, we just have gotten this past week the total ag trade numbers for December. So we now have a complete picture of exports for all of calendar year 2018. Total ag export value for 2017 was $138.2 billion. 2018, $139.7 billion.
Which is a 1.1% increase.
USDA trade economist Cameron Daugherty, he says, of course, most of the gains were made early in 2018 before the Chinese tariffs kicked in, which kicked out most U.S. soybeans from China. Daugherty says, fortunately, as far as soybeans were concerned,
exports to all of our major trading partners outside of China, we saw increases, and with China, we saw a significant drop-off.
Oh, yeah, drop-off of 74% last year compared to 2017. So overall, soybean sales to all customers last year down 20%, bringing in just over $17 billion. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So I just hope that, be honest with you, a lot of people are saying Ocasio-Cortez and Representative Omar, they need to shut up. I say just the opposite. They have to keep talking. The last thing I want them to do is shut up. I disagree with many of my friends who say they've got to shut them up. Nope.
No.
I believe the American public should know exactly what the other side stands for.
Right.
Exactly. And if they go for it, that's on them.
Here's your forecast.
Daylight saving time is here, a sure sign winter is on the wane. Also in Dallas, Texas, the average date of the last freeze is March 12th. But you look at Chicago, the average date of the last freeze there, April 25th. Between those two points, a wide area of the country. So we've got a ways to go. but we're just over a week away from the March equinox, the 20th of the month, next Wednesday, the first day of spring. Areas for showers today include central Texas and southern Oklahoma. Showers are possible along the Gulf states from New Orleans today, up into just south of Atlanta and on into the Carolinas, then offshore. A good portion of the mid-Atlantic and Midwest will be clear. After some heavy snowfall over the weekend in the northern plains, things at least will be sunny there, as well as clear skies for the Pacific Northwest. Heavy rain for the desert southwest beginning tomorrow. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 86690 Red Eye.
They've got the goods. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric, I'm Gary. All right, some fun now. And this is going to be fun here during the primary, as you have the Democrat candidates trying to say, I'm not a socialist, I'm not a capitalist, I'm a capitalist, I'm a socialist, trying to figure out what they are. And we start out, first off, Face the Nation and former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, who was announced last week he was running for a president, was on Face the Nation, and that question came up.
I want to offer you the chance to clear something up here, because you did an interview earlier in the week where you were asked three times if you would call yourself a proud capitalist, and you wouldn't directly answer the question. It led Howard Schultz, who's possibly a candidate, to say, if even a successful businessman and entrepreneur like Governor Hickenlooper can't openly support capitalism in the Democratic primary, it's clear this is Senator Sanders' party now. Why are you uncomfortable calling yourself a proud capitalist?
Well, the point I was making is that we define people by these labels that often have all kinds of associations and baggage with them. In that sense, do I believe in small business? Of course I believe in small business. I started probably more than 20 different small businesses. I'd have, you know, in 1 year, I'd have over 1 million customers. I understand that. But what's happening? I think it's kind of a silly question. We should be looking at some of the reasons behind why we have less and less startups. We should look at some of the reasons why, you know, more and more people aren't wanting to start a business.
Sure, but you understand that it is a main Republican talking point to label Democrats right now as anti-business socialists.
Right, but that's ridiculous. Obviously,
so you would reject
the
that.
The Democratic Party is a big tent.
You reject that label.
So there's where we're going. I mean, he wouldn't say it. Then you had Elizabeth Warren. And this was just classic, all right? I have the quotes here. Elizabeth Warren said in an interview, this is from thehill.com, broadcast Sunday, that it's wrong to call her a socialist as Republican critics seek to use a label against her and other progressive Democrats running for president. Quote, I believe in markets that work, Warren said on Face the Nation. Quote, markets that have a cop on the beat and have real rules and everybody follows them. She continued, I believe in a level playing field. And as long as we've got that, then we will get the best out of the markets, because it means that people who come up with great ideas, who work hard, are the ones who will prosper, not simply the ones who were born into wealth. And so if you get labeled a socialist, well, that's just wrong. Oh, man, this is enjoyable. First off, you notice how Hickenlooper immediately went and said, well, I'm for small business. Didn't say large business, because you can't say you're for large business.
It's all about mom and pop.
Right. And now it's all about mom. So Hickenlooper can't. And he specifically said, I'm for small business. It's like, well, no, I'm for business.
What if a small business becomes the largest business in the world, Amazon?
I don't know. Now, Elizabeth Warren, of course, Elizabeth Warren is much more. Socialism is in degrees. If you have a Bernie Sanders, he calls himself a socialist. Mm. When you, for example, for people who don't understand it, socialism is the government controlling more of the capital. That's more of the money.
and then controlling the means of production, and then getting to the point of communism where you actually control, there is no private property anymore, and you control, you own all the companies, and there is no more private property. Private property rights are gone. And so there's a scale that you're on. When you have, for example, Ocasio-Cortez, which is talking about getting rid of all fossil fuels, getting rid of all getting rid of all internal combustion engines, gone. Well, in order to do that, you have to have government nationalizing the energy industry and the car industry, because investors will disappear when government comes in and says, here's what you must do. And so the only investor left would be government. So government would have to own all the energy companies, the nationalized energy companies. Who owns the companies in Venezuela? Oh, that's right. The energy companies are all nationalized.
No.
The electricity, all nationalized.
Oh.
And so that's the point. She is promoting to the point, and to get where you would have to get with her, which is, you know, you have to redo every single building in America. All fossil fuels are gone. Everything would have to run on electricity. So that means your homes and everything else. To get rid of every single car would mean you would have to take away people's private property. Who would give them the electric vehicle to replace it? Who knows how that would be done? In all essence, it wouldn't be done, because who would be giving away the, how would they be able to do it? The economy would collapse in an instant if you did that. And what's the first step that you take? You notice she can't tell you, well, what's the first step? Tell us the first step. How would you do this? You can't, because the first step, there'd be a revolt of the people of the United States. People of the United States don't want socialism. We want free stuff. As soon as you wish to limit our choices, we will push back.
Gimmeism.
It's gimmeism. Yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm. I like that better.
Gimmeism.
Gimmeism, yep. Is...
What's in it for me?
Gimmeism is what Americans want. We don't want socialism because we don't want to limit our choices. We don't want to be told what to do. We just want free stuff. It's gimmeism.
Yeah.
And so, you know, where you, Hickenlooper, where he can't talk about it. I say, look, I'm a proud capitalist. I believe in as much private enterprise as possible for both big and small corporations.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want. I want an expanding economy for all. I don't want government ownership. I don't want government taking over any big industry.
I don't want heavy regulation, because that regulation comes with a cost.
Yes. For Elizabeth Warren, I have no idea what she's talking about, because it's total complete generalities, 100%.
And since when does someone on the far left want a cop on the beat?
That's true. Markets that have real rules and everybody follows them.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, what does that mean?
What? So there aren't real rules now?
Right. There are no rules for companies in the United States now?
Right. And it's a given.
I bet you there are over a million rules for companies. I bet you it's over a million rules for companies.
Sure. Yeah.
What do you mean, no rules?
Altogether, there's probably hundreds of millions of different rules.
Right.
Depending on the industry and the company.
And everybody follows them. Well, that's where you have government enforcement and government enforcement of contracts, number one.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole thing that government doesn't have rules for corporations is an absurdity. Yet people will buy it, and people will cheer for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Ocasio-Cortez saying that, in getting cheered for it, if you're unemployed in America, you're left out to die.
Right.
That's completely false. And she got huge cheers for that.
Right.
I'm sure Elizabeth Warren, well, she was on Face the Nation, mm-hmm. but I'm sure she gets cheers
mm-hmm.
if she's on the stump out there and says and said that we have to have real rules, because corporations act without any rules to govern them. I bet you she could say that and get away with it, and everybody would cheer.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
You know, this is the populist left. They want you to believe that that the corporations are running everything. And Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah.
The corporations run the government. Nope.
No, they don't.
Nope. You can look at how many or what amount any given corporation gives to any given side, any given party. And they often, many corporations give to both.
Right.
You're playing your bet. You're hedging. That's what that's called.
Do American corporations attempt to influence the government? Yes. Why? Because they're regulated by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And they have every right to petition the government for a redress of their grievances just as you do.
Right.
An American corporation is going to be taxed. They have every right to protest that tax.
Just like mom and pop.
Just like mom and pop. Mm-hmm. If mom and pop have that right, if a bunch of mom and pops that really, if you think about it, it's mom and pops across the nation that probably support the majority of the Chamber of Commerce across America,
mm-hmm.
which are what? Very pro-business, mm-hmm. very low corporate tax.
They have their, they have their lobbying group.
And another question, since we're on this one, since we're going to have some fun near the end of the show, when is mom and pop no longer a mom and pop? And when a mom and pop is no longer a mom and pop, what does a mom and pop begin? I have not heard so much mom and pop talk since a Seinfeld episode on mom and pop. Mm-hmm. And mom and pop took off. Remember, they ran off on their...
Right.
Because mom and pop wasn't... Remember, mom and pop wasn't following city code.
Right.
In the Seinfeld episode. Mm-hmm. And Seinfeld said, what's so great about mom and pop? If my mom and pop ran a business, it wouldn't be great.
Right. No, but that's what, where the left wants you to believe.
Can you believe the left is back to mom and pop?
Well, that's because...
Can you believe this?
It's because they sell socialism is based on the little guy, right?
Yes,
sir. The odds are stacked against you. Well, go back and look at all the that these... successful businesses that were created along the way. They didn't just start with $10 billion in the bank.
Well, I think small business since what? It used to be, I don't know what the number is now, it used to be roughly 75% of all small businesses fail.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, so the odds are against you.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. And you look at the huge success stories that were started by individuals at that small, very grassroots level, where they go out and do what? Borrow against, you know, a credit card or against their home and put everything on the line. Many of those people that do that still today lose it all.
Unless John Taffer rescues them on Bar Rescue.
Yes, and some of those folks can't be rescued. The idea is that the government should be doing more for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Ask what your country can do for you.
Well, the asinine thing about what former Governor Hickenlooper said was, you know, I'm for small business. And, you know, that's the whole mom and pop mm-hmm. garbage because, as, you know, the research has shown. And I remember the research that was done, we brought it to you probably 5 or 6 years ago. The intensive research that was done and said, look, you can't separate the two. And they found out that the average multi-billion dollar corporation does business with 6,000, just one, the average of 6,000 small and very small businesses across the United States.
Well, even Amazon has individual sellers.
Right. And so they said, you can't separate the two. It isn't small business versus big business. Everything is interlocked.
Right.
As we've said with the supply chains, it's like when the president said that, you know, that believes he can control trade. And it's like, don't you understand the supply lines? The supply chain is a billion tentacles of an octopus all over the place.
Right.
One company or one country doesn't build a product anymore. If one country has a final assembly line, there's probably hundreds of suppliers around the world and multiple couple of dozen countries that have those suppliers that supply you with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when these politicians attempt to come in and say, I can control the economy. If you let me in, I can provide the proper oversight. I alone know how to do it. If right. the government can control it, we can do it better.
Right.
Not likely.
No, that's not the case. You start taking more and more and more. And because they'll look at that and say, they'll look at any given problem or create a problem where there isn't one and tell you, we can solve this problem by taking more from over here and moving it over here. And the fact of the matter is, that doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't. It doesn't solve it with health care. It doesn't solve it with anything. The private sector finds the solutions. If there is a calling for it, then the private sector eventually will get to it. When there's a greater, what are we seeing in fact right now with health care? Greater transparency. By the way, the president the other day
That's right.
Promoting a greater transparency in pricing. In other words, healthcare providers, hospitals, would have to publicize the deals that they make with insurance companies, the rates that they give insurance companies. We've been talking about transparency for a long time. I can sit on any given corner and I can shop for gas prices without getting out of my car. Transparency.
866-90-RUD-EYE.
Cold and snowy weather doesn't just affect your fuel. It also affects your fuel's filtration system. For diesel engines, fuel filters are the last line of defense for dust, dirt, and debris entering the combustion cylinders. Cold weather will only make matters worse. Any major drop in temperature can cause your fuel to gel and clog your filters. If you're having issues with your fuel system, try changing your filter. You should also be changing your fuel filter during every maintenance check. And it would be wise to keep an extra filter in your cab this winter. You never know when you may need it. If you need help changing your filter, stop into TA Truck Service today.
This report brought to you by Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. Tomorrow we'll talk about the jobs report, too.
Yeah.
Get into that in some
not
detail.
A great jobs report from last Friday.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.